ओम गणेश मिनंदस्य जनार्दन सलकया सबसे सुंदर चांद जैना हजमाय श्री हरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोविस्ताम स्थापितम जन उत्तरे स्वयं उपकरणम हम जगति साक्षी We're now in the final chapter of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. The first ten chapters of this canto discussed the wonderful pastime of Prahlad Maharaj. The first chapter was actually, one can't say that it introduced it as if that was the only purpose, but there was a wonderful dialogue between Yudhisthira Maharaj, that was the main one, and Narada Muni about the Lord's position of equality. And that led into the showing how the Lord, everything he does is good for everyone. And that was to illustrate that the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and his father, Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu, the great demon, was killed by the Lord in the form of Lord Narasingadev, Narasingha, half man, half lion. And the point was made how even when the Lord kills, because killing someone is not considered acting for their welfare, and to protect another person, Prahlad Maharaj, it seems like the Lord was favoring Prahlad for Hiranyakashipu. But no, although in one sense the Lord certainly is, Lord Narasingadev certainly favored his devotee Prahlad, but yet everything he does is beneficial for everyone he does it to. So therefore, we saw how Hiranyakashipu was actually benefited by being ripped apart by the nails of Lord Narasingadev. He was liberated, or pushed further towards liberation. There's a long involved story about who Hiranyakashipu was and how he got to that position. But in any case, when Krishna does anything, it is beneficial. So in the final chapters, Prahlad Maharaj, in chapter 10, he glorifies, he actually exemplifies being, showing us what a great devotee is like, and showing the exaltedness of devotional service, how the devotee has no desires. Just imagine. He's so satisfied that he has no desires other than to please Krishna. There is nothing else on his mind, within his heart. His heart is already so full that there is no room for anything petty, anything mundane, anything selfish, self-oriented. Because his heart is full due to his devotion, love for Krishna, bhakti. Bhakti yoga, connected fully with Krishna. So in chapter 11, upon hearing about the wonderful qualities of Prahlad Maharaj and his incredible consciousness, incredibly pure consciousness, which displayed the wonderful characteristics of devotional service, Yudhisthira Maharaj asked, how is it possible for us to achieve devotional service? Because this is the goal of existence. We are souls trapped within the material world, and especially in human life, We are meant to awaken our Krishna consciousness. This is the actual goal and purpose of life. When one's consciousness can expand, when we engage in materialistic activities, our consciousness becomes dull, becomes covered, contracted, and filled with suffering, actually. So much so that one can take one's consciousness, the soul has so much consciousness, but it can be contracted if we don't use our lives properly, into a tree's body or something like that, where the soul practically doesn't even exhibit consciousness, or some kind of a peculiar bug or worm that never comes out of the ground. Just imagine how contracted the consciousness of the soul is, you know, in such a body. Or on the other hand, when someone is exalted in consciousness, it means his consciousness is fully exhibited. And the fullest exhibition of the soul's consciousness is when his relationship with Krishna is awakened and open. So Yudhisthira asks, how can we attain this awakened or Krishna consciousness? And Narada Muni replies, describing a social system which naturally purifies one and allows one's consciousness to expand, and that's called Vanashrama Dharma. So in the 10th chapter, in the 11th chapter, a basic outline of this Vanashrama Dharma system is given. And it describes the essence of this system is actually devotional service, because that is what it's meant to achieve. Chattavana maya shrishtam guna kama vabhagasa. But Krishna creates the Vanashrama system so that persons in it will gradually become elevated in consciousness. So in the 11th chapter of the 7th canto, Narada Muni describes that and briefly describes what the duties are of the persons in this system, including the women and those even not in the system, those outside of the basic Vanashrama system, which includes 8 spiritual orders, including the Varnic orders or the occupational duty orders, Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahmana, and the stages of one's life orders called the Ashramas or Brahmachari, student, household, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, renunciant, and Sannyasi, preacher. So in the 11th chapter, this is basically described. In the 12th chapter, the Brahmacharis or the students are described, along with the Grihasthas and Vanaprasthas, very briefly. Then in the 13th chapter, the Sannyasis or the renunciants are described, up to the point of the Avadutas. An Avaduta is one who is beyond following any of the restrictions or laws that govern the members of society, but it's not that he's whimsically not following them. The Avaduta is one who has achieved the result of the Vanashrama system, and he's above all material nature. He's actually transcendental, and therefore he acts in any way he likes, because he's above material conditioning. So this is a very, very rare stage. Sometimes in ISKCON, when someone is an eccentric type of person, they'll say he's an avaduta. But that's not actually what avaduta means. It doesn't mean eccentric. It means someone who is not at all touched by the modes of material nature, not even slightly. He's completely above it. He has no false ego, no sense of being the body. He's acting free, although in the material world, not constricted by any element of matter. So in this, that was the 14th chapter, or rather the 13th chapter. In the 14th chapter, Grihastha life or family life is described. And then now the 15th chapter. So basically, in a simple way, the orders of society, how to organize society in such a way that the spiritual purpose of life, the spiritual focus of life, is not lost, but rather people's lives are naturally cultured to go upward in consciousness. So in this chapter of the 15th chapter is going to describe, I'll read the first, Prabhupada has a summary, and I'll read the first paragraph of the summary, because it's going to discuss many things, and then the conclusions is going to be given towards the end. Here's Prabhupada's summary, the first paragraph of the summary. The summary of the 15th chapter is as follows. In the previous chapter, Sri Narada Muni proved the importance of the Brahmana in society. Why are the Brahmanas so important? Because the Brahmanas, or the spiritual intellectuals, they are like the head of society. They give the directions in society. And the Brahmana's business is to remain pure in consciousness, so his directions, and very learned in the Shastras, or the scriptures, so that his directions, the directions that he gives for society, will keep the society on the spiritual path. And he has to have assimilated the scriptures so well that if anyone asks him a question, he'll be able to answer that question based on his knowledge of the Shastra, of the scriptures. If one only knows a little part of the scriptures, then whatever one asks, he's going to give that answer, the answer from that part that he knows. But if one has assimilated the totality of the scriptures and has realized something, then he can give the appropriate answer, just like a doctor. He doesn't only know just one little cure for one particular disease, but he has to know the symptoms of so many diseases and so many different medicinal cures, so that whoever comes to him, he can give his considered opinion. So the Brahmanas, in a similar way, have to have assimilated the scriptures, the Shastra, and can advise appropriately, and therefore keep society on track. And they themselves have to be very renounced, learned and renounced, not attached to the material world. That is ideally. So, in the previous chapter, Sri Narada Muni proved the importance of the Brahmanas in society. Now, in this chapter, he would show the differences between different grades of Brahmanas. So, there are different qualities of Brahmanas who give different instructions. Amongst the Brahmanas, some are householders and are mostly attached to fruitive activities or the betterment of social conditions. Above them, however, are Brahmanas who are very much attracted by austerities and penances, and who retire from family life. They are known as vanaprasthas. Other Brahmanas are very much interested in studying the Vedas and explaining the purpose of the Vedas to others. Such Brahmanas are called brahmacharis. And still other Brahmanas are interested in different types of yoga, especially bhakti yoga and jnana yoga. Such Brahmanas are mostly sannyasis, members of the renounced order. So even Brahmanas, there are gradations of learning according to, and all of their learnings are based on the scriptures, based on the Shastras. But they are gradated according to their attachment to the material world, or ultimately their attachment to Krishna. Because, and this is what's going to come out at the end of this chapter, that attachment to Krishna is the goal of all the Vedas, of all the Vanashrama society. This is what is meant to be developed. This is the purpose of human life. This is the expansion of consciousness to somehow or another become attached to Krishna. So here's the first verse. Narada Muni continued. Now he's going to begin discriminating between the different types of Brahmanas. My dear king, he's speaking to Yudhisthira Maharaj, some Brahmanas are very much attached to fruitive activities, because in the Vedas, there are different sections of the Vedas, and the Karmakanda section describes fruitive practices. And there are very important reasons why these are described in the Vedas. Fruitive meaning they give one material benefits. But gradually, if one practices this Vedic method of getting material benefits, one gradually becomes elevated in consciousness. So some brahmanas, especially householder brahmanas, specialize in this. My dear king, some brahmanas are very much attached to fruit of activities. Some are attached to austerities and penances. And that's the, Prabhupada had described, these are the vanaprasthas, or the renunciants. And still others study the Vedic literature, and that's the brahmacharis. Whereas some, although very few, cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially bhakti yoga. So this is the most rarefied personality, a brahmana whose consciousness is basically good. What does it mean to have good consciousness? It means to not be full of material desires, because passion, the mode of passion, fills with desires. And ignorance, quite the opposite of goodness, makes one very, very dull of consciousness. And goodness itself brings knowledge automatically. Sattvam sandayate jnanam. Automatically, one can experience in his consciousness that he is not the body, that he's a soul, that he's different from the body. And he experiences himself present within the body, but not the body. This is the nature of the mode of goodness. Just by having good consciousness, one achieves that. But even higher than that is when that good consciousness develops its attraction to Krishna. So that's, therefore, the highest is the one practicing bhakti yoga. The second verse. So that was just a summary of these four different types of brahmanas. A person desiring liberation for his forefathers or himself should give charity to a brahmana who adheres to impersonal monism, jnana nishtha. This is the second verse. In the absence of such an advanced brahmana, charity may be given to a brahmana addicted to fruit of activities, karmakanda. In other words, that when one wishes to perform the Shraddha ceremony or give in charity, one will be benefited according to whom one gives the charity to. So one should give it to a very qualified person, and the most qualified person is one who is detached from the material world. This is called jnana-nishtha, or fixed in knowledge. But if one can't find such a brahmana, the verse explains, one can give to the second best kind of brahmana, one who is following the Vedas, but following the fruitive sections of the Vedas. And here is Prabhupada's purport. There are two processes by which to get free from material bondage. One involves jnana-kanda and karma-kanda, and the other involves upasana-kanda. Vaishnavas never want to merge into the existence of the Supreme. Rather, they want to be everlastingly servants to the Lord, to render loving service unto Him. In this verse, the word anantyam, ichita, refers to persons who desire to achieve liberation from material bondage and merge into the existence of the Lord. Devotees, however, whose objective is to associate personally with the Lord, have no desire to accept the activities of karmakanda or jnanakanda. For pure devotional service is above both karmakanda and jnanakanda. Anyabhilasita sanyam jnanakamar anavrita. In pure devotional service, there is not even a pinch of jnana or karma. Consequently, when Vaishnavas distribute charity, they do not need to find a brahmana performing the activities of jnana-kanda or karma-kanda. The best example in this regard is provided by Advaita Goswami, who, after performing the Shraddha ceremony for his father, offered charity to Haridas Thakur. Although it was known to everyone that Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family, not a brahmana family, and was not interested in the activities of jnana-kanda or karma-kanda. Charity, therefore, should be given to a first-class transcendentalist, the devotee, because the Shastras recommend muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana sadolabha prasanatma kotishapi mahamune. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayan or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. Why is such a devotee so rare? And why, even in this material world, although it's impossible to be peaceful and it's impossible to be happy in the material world, how is it that such a devotee, Sudolava, such a rare devotee, is actually peaceful and happy? How is it possible? And the answer is that actually such a transcendental devotee is not in the material world because of his consciousness being so directly connected with Krishna, fully dependent on Krishna through bhakti yoga. Fully Krishna conscious. Like Prahlad Maharaj, Bahir Nasinga, Hridaye Nasinga. Everywhere he would look, he would see the Lord. He would see Lord Nisringadev, the Absolute Truth, the Personality of God. So such a person, like Prahlad Maharaj, is peaceful wherever he is. And every other kind of person, everyone outside of the category of Prahlad Maharaj, is unpeaceful, asanta, wherever he is. No matter what circumstance we or he puts himself in, there is no situation that will make us happy. Until we come to this, bhakti mukti siddhi kamis shakali asanta, can't be peaceful. So therefore, although the Bhagavatam here is saying one should give charity to this type of a Brahmin or that type of a Brahmin, Prabhupada is explaining the example of Advaitacharya, who basically went to the essence of the system, took it at its essence, and gave his charity to someone who wasn't even a Brahmana, but he wasn't even a Hindu. He was a Mohammedan, not a terrorist. But because that person, Thakur Haridas, was completely fixed in chanting the holy names, so fixed that nothing of the material world could touch his consciousness at all. Nothing. No false ego whatsoever. No tendency. Not even the fragrance of a tendency to try to be the enjoyer of it. Fixed in Krishna consciousness. That person, Thakur Haridas, was the greatest transcendentalist and deserving of the greatest charity, even by someone like Advaitacharya, who was born in a Brahmin family. So he acknowledged, he wanted to prove this point, that really who is the topmost person is one who is a devotee, who is a transcendental devotee. Such a person, he is prasanatma, sadolava prasanatma, out of so many thousands. This kind of person is very rare. Why is he so rare? It's so wonderful. So wonderful, but yet so rare. Something so wonderful, one would think that everyone would naturally want it. Something that brings true satisfaction to the heart. But why is such consciousness rare? Is because it requires that one give up all material desires and attachments and focus one's entire consciousness on Krishna, on pleasing Krishna. So how many people in this world will be so serious and so dedicated? Very rare. And so ikeha kurunandana vyavya satmika buddhi, so fixed and determined in consciousness. So therefore, the conclusion here, a Vaishnava is in a higher position than the Jnani, and therefore a Advaitacharya selected.
Haridas Thakur to be the person to accept charity. So here also, from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there is a quotation. Even though a person is a very learned scholar of the Sanskrit Vedic literature, he is not accepted as my devotee unless he is pure in devotional service. However, even though a person is born in a family of dog eaters, he is very dear to me if he is a pure devotee who has no motive to enjoy fruit of activities or mental speculation. So this is the path that we want to follow on very closely, the path of pure devotional service. Indeed, Hari Bhakti Vilas says, all respect should be given to him, and whatever he offers should be accepted. Such devotees are as worshipable as I am, as Krishna is. Then the third verse. So in this discrimination amongst the different types of brahmanas, and this is the level of in describing in this chapter, in the beginning part, there's these type of cultural, almost ritualistic discriminations based on the Vedic culture. Because the society ideally should be organized around this culture, but the essence of the culture should always be kept in mind, and that is to bring someone to the platform of pure devotion. So there's going to be, we'll read some more on this line of discriminations within the realm of this Vedic Varnashrama culture. So during the period, this is text 3, for offering oblations to the demigods, one should invite only two brahmanas, and while offering oblations to the forefathers, one may invite three brahmanas, or in either case only one brahmana will suffice. But one has to invite brahmanas because they direct the ceremonies. Even though one is very opulent, he should not endeavor to invite more brahmanas or make various expensive arrangements on those occasions. Prabhupada's purport. As we have already mentioned, Srila Advaita Charya, during the generally observed ceremony to offer oblations to the forefathers, invited only Haridas Thakur. So this is the Shraddha ceremony. The Shraddha ceremony is when one performs a ritual for the betterment of one's ancestors. This, in every religion, there is some prayers offered to celebrate the death of one's parents or grandparents, to benefit them wherever they are. This is how the children repay their great debt to their parents for what the sacrifices their parents have made in bringing them up and bringing them to this world. So there are rituals that govern this. But again, Advaita Charya, Prabhupada is making the point that Advaita Charya, when it came to giving the charity, even though according to the ritualistic methodology, there are some discriminations about how many Brahmins should be invited and what they should do, but yet Advaita Charya again went to the essence of this and invited only Haridas Thakur. Thus he followed this principle, Name Bhaktas Chaturvedi Mad Bhaktas Sopachapriya. The Lord said, it is not necessary that one become very expert in Vedic knowledge before he can become my bhakta or devotee. Even if one is born in a family of dog eaters, he can become my devotee and be very dear to me in spite of taking birth in such a family. So this should be very encouraging, because there are no external limitations to our advancement. The limitations are unfortunately all internal. But there's no external limitations. Therefore, Prabhupada continues, offerings should be given to my devotee, and whatever my devotee has offered me should be accepted. Again, quoting the same verse from Hari Bhakti Vilas. Following this principle, one should invite a first-class Brahmana or Vaishnava, a realized soul, and feed him while observing the Shraddha ceremony to offer oblations to one's forefathers. Text 4. If one arranges to feed many brahmanas or relatives during the Shraddha ceremony, there will be discrepancies in the time, place, respectability, and ingredients, the persons to be worshipped, and the methods of offering worship. So if there's too many different authorities, because brahmins are all authorities, and they tend to have their own opinion about everything. So if you invite too many people, too many brahmanas, you can't listen to everyone, so you'll have to listen to only one of them and say and do it the way he wants it to be done. And then if there are 15 there, there'll be 14 insulted. And there'll be discrepancies, and then they won't be pleased. And the result won't come. So therefore, one shouldn't invite two or one or three at most. Prabhupada's purport. Narada Muni has prohibited unnecessarily gorgeous arrangements to feed relatives or brahmins during the Shraddha ceremony. Those who are materially opulent spend lavishly during this ceremony. Indians spend especially lavishly on three occasions: on the birth of a child, at marriage, and while observing the Shraddha ceremony. But the Shastras prohibit the excessive expenditures involved in inviting many Brahmins and relatives, especially during the Shraddha ceremony. 5. When one gets the opportunity of a suitable auspicious time and place, what should one do? If one is in an auspicious place at an auspicious time, what is the most auspicious thing to do? With love, one should offer food prepared with ghee to the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then offer the prasad to a suitable person, a Vaishnava or a Brahmin. This will be the cause of everlasting prosperity. One should offer prasad to the demigods, the saintly persons, one's forefathers, the people in general, one's family members, one's relatives, and one's friends, seeing them all as devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even when one takes the position to distribute food or distribute food to the poor, one should distribute spiritual food, prasadam, and that will bring everlasting benefit. And Prabhupada in his purport, he condemns one of the things that he very often condemns, the concept of Daridra Narayan, or seeing the poor as if they are God. And Prabhupada often says that God never becomes poor. But to give poor people prasadam is wonderful, because they're souls. They're not actually poor. They're eternal souls. So benefit them. Give them spiritual food. Give them prasadam, welfare work, spiritual welfare work. Text 7. A person fully aware of religious principles should never offer anything like meat, eggs, or fish in the Shraddha ceremony. So again, this is how to deal with the Shraddha ceremony, the ritualistic ceremonies. And even if one is a Kshatriya, he himself should not eat such things. When suitable food prepared with ghee is offered to saintly persons, the function is pleasing to the forefathers and the Supreme Lord, who are never pleased when animals are killed in the name of sacrifices. So now there will be some verses. Even though the Vedas speak of animal sacrifices, yet these verses have assimilated the purpose of the Vedas forbid these type of sacrifices. Persons who want to advance better than these kind of rituals, animal sacrifices. Now this verse is very interesting. Persons who want to advance in superior religion, because there are so many different levels of religious practices, and people will endlessly argue about which religious system is the best. Best means superior, which is the highest. So here's something interesting that Narada Muni says. Persons who would want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of all other living entities, whether in relationship to the body, words, or mind. This is Parodharma. This is the highest religion. Free from envy. Nimatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam is written on this platform, on this level. Free from envy. And actually, to become free from envy, one has to become free from envy of Krishna, of God. That's the ultimate freedom of envy. And practically speaking, one can't become free from envy until one reaches that platform completely, because our being in the material world is basically an envious position of turning our back on Krishna. Anadya bahimuk atte eva mayatari samsareta duk. We get the result of that, being birth and death and birth and death. There is no religion superior to this, Narada Muni says, giving up of envy, body, words, and mind. This is the superior religion, not animal sacrifices or whatever. So who can give up the performing one's prescribed religious duties legitimately? Text 9. Because of an awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles, intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge or knowledge of the Absolute Truth, they may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies. So in other words, when one is at least approaching the platform of knowledge, of jnana, then one can give up the karma kanda or fruit of section of the Vedas. So this section again is somewhat technical. Upon seeing the person, this is text 10, person engaged in performing the sacrifice, animals meant to be sacrificed are extremely afraid, thinking, this merciless performer of sacrifices, being ignorant of the purpose of sacrifice and being most satisfied by killing others, will surely kill us. Just imagine the consciousness one has to have to kill. Just imagine the consciousness one has to have. You see even a rabbit. There are so many people who kill rabbits, but the rabbit is terrified and trembling. How cruel and hard-hearted one has to be. Or the more developed animals, even, what to speak of a cow. I once passed a slaughterhouse in California many, many, many years ago, and they kept it in the desert. Why? Because the cows were just crying and screaming and crying and crying on the side of the road, knowing they're going to be killed. How cruel, hard-hearted, envious, nasty-hearted, demonic practically. What to speak of killing humans cruelly, lining old people, ladies, children up and digging a big hole, shooting them, burying them. And this is going on. What a world. So the animals are aware of the consciousness that these people have who are performing the sacrifices, who are killing, even religiously. They will surely kill us, the animals are thinking. Why? Because their consciousness is so nasty. Therefore, text 11, day by day, one who is actually aware of religious principles and who is not heinously envious of poor animals should happily perform daily sacrifices and those for certain occasions with whatever food is available easily by the grace of the Lord. So this section is against these animal sacrifices, even though they are mentioned in the Vedas. Prabhupada will give a practical application of this principle of what type of sacrifice to perform. The practical application, he's going to give that here. The word dharmavit, meaning one who knows the actual purpose of religion, is very significant. As explained in Bhagavad Gita 18:66, Sarvadhammam Pratyajamam Ekam Sharanam Braja. Becoming Krishna conscious is the topmost stage in understanding of religious principles. One who reaches this stage performs the archana process in devotional service. This is the worship of the deity. Anyone, whether a grihastha or a sannyasi, can keep small deities of the Lord suitably packed or, if possible, installed, and thus worship the deities of Radha Krishna, Sitaram, Lakshmi Narayan, Lord Jagannath, or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by offering food prepared in ghee and then offering the sanctified prasadam to the forefathers, demigods, and other living entities is a matter of routine daily work. All the centers of our Krishna consciousness movement have deity worship programs very nicely going on, in which food is offered to the deity and distributed to the first class Brahmins and Vaishnavas and even to the people in general. This performance of sacrifice brings complete satisfaction. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement engage daily in such transcendental activities. Thus, in our Krishna consciousness movement, there is no question at all of killing animals. So in the Shraddha ceremony, to help one's forefathers, one performs sacrifices, but this kind of sacrifice where the animals are killed is not required. In fact, it is prohibited actually. Instead, just worship the deity, offer wonderful tasty prasadam to the deity, and then offer the prasadam to one's forefathers. This is Vaishnava Shraddha ceremony. This is the way a devotee will take care of his family members. And then distribute prasadam to everyone. The prasadam can be distributed to the demigods even. So if one wants to worship the demigods, they can be worshipped with the prasadam of the Lord that's first offered to the deities. Text 12 of 14 discuss different irreligious acts. There are five branches of irreligion, appropriately known as Vidharma, which is irreligion, Paradharma, religious principles for which one is unfit, Abhas, pretentious religion, Upadharma, analogical religion, and Chaladharma, and cheating religion. One who is aware of real religious life must abandon these five as irreligious. Religious principles that obstruct one from following his own religion, his actual own duties, are called Vidharma. Religious principles introduced by others are called Paradharma, a new type of religion created by one who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas is called Upadharma. And interpretations by one's jugglery of words is called Chaladharma. So Prabhupada, in his purport to 12, we read 12 and 13 verses. And then I'll read 14 too, and then we'll read these purports. Very interesting. A pretentious religious system manufactured by one who is willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called abhas, a dim reflection of false similarity. But if one performs the prescribed duties for his particular ashramavana, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses? So read these purports. Prabhupada's purport to 12. He, again, as always, Prabhupada goes right to the essential point. Any religious principle opposed to the principle of surrendering to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, principles, are to be considered religious principles of irregularity or cheating. And one who is actually interested in religion must give them up. So it takes knowledge of the conclusion of religion to understand what is actually religious and what is actually irreligious. And people will say so many different things are religious and so many different things are spiritual. But unless one knows truly what the goal of spirituality or religion is, one will not be able to discriminate whether a religious practice or formula is good for one or another. But if one knows the purpose of religion, what the essential religious principle is, it's easy to discriminate and understand what will bring us closer and what will bring us further away. One should simply follow the instructions of Krishna and surrender unto him. To do this, of course, one needs very good intelligence, which may be awakened after many, many births through good association with devotees and the practice of Krishna consciousness. Everything but the principle of religion recommended by Krishna, Savadamam Prityajam, Amekam Sharanam Braja, should be given up is irreligion. That means that the highest religious principle is called Bhagavad Dharma, or actions meant to please Krishna. When one's heart is surrendered to Krishna with love, and one's desire is to satisfy Him, that is the principle, the basic principle of religion. And advanced consciousness develops from that platform. Purport to text 13. To create a new type of dharma or religion has become fashionable in this age. So-called swamis and yogis support that one may follow any type of religious system according to one's choice because all systems are ultimately the same. This is typical New Age philosophy also, that do as you like because ultimately nothing matters. Everything will bring you to that same goal of oneness. In Srimad Bhagavatam, however, such fashionable ideas are called vidharma because they go against one's own religious system. The real religious system is described by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvadhammam Pratyajamamekam Sharanam Braja. The real religious system is that of surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. This isn't actually fanatical. Prabhupada sometimes is so strong, and he condemns this, and he criticizes that, and he calls these people rascals, and he's so heavy and so strong, but his consciousness is fixed on what religion, what the spiritual path actually is, and that is that one has to give himself to the Supreme Lord, not develop through sinful activities a big false ego and do whatever one wants. No, one must give himself with devotion to the Lord. The real religious system is that of surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in connection with Ajamil's deliverance, Yamaraj says, Dhammam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. Real religion is that which is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as real law is that which is given by the government. No one can manufacture actual law at home, nor can one manufacture actual religion. Elsewhere it is said, Savai Pumsam Parodamo Yati Bhakti Hochajay. The real religious system is that which leads one to become a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, anything opposed to this religious system of progressive Krishna consciousness is called Vidharma, Paradharma, Upadharma, or Chaladharma. Misinterpretations of Bhagavad Gita is Chaladharma. When Krishna directly says something and some rascal interprets it to mean something different, this is Chaladharma, a religious system of cheating, or Sabdabhit, a jugglery of words. One should be extremely careful to avoid these various types of cheating systems of religion. Now, in text 15, I'd like to read the next to 17. I'll read there's three verses, but there's only one purport, and it's not very long. And then we'll conclude. Now, why does one pick up one religious form or another? Why does one do anything? Why does one change what one's doing? It's because of lack of satisfaction, lack of being satisfied. Because when one's not satisfied, one wants. And when one is fully satisfied, like if one's eaten a big feast, one no longer has a desire to eat anymore. So if one is satisfied, one's desires aren't present anymore. So one performs all these sacrifices because one wants something. So here, in 15, we'll read all three verses now. Even if a man is poor, now what does a poor man want? He wants to remove his poverty and become wealthy. Even if a man is poor, he should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together or to become a famous religionist. Just as a great python, although lying in one place, not endeavoring for its livelihood, gets the food it needs to maintain the body and soul, one who is desireless also obtains his livelihood without endeavor. 16. One who is content and satisfied, and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, residing in everyone's heart, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed, and who therefore wanders in all directions with a desire to accumulate wealth? For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, listen to this analogy. You'll never hear an analogy like this again. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. So this is the whole, not the whole illusion of materialistic society, but such a big part of it. Because no one is feeling satisfied, that the culture points everyone to fulfill his material desires. And that saying that that will bring happiness. Purchasing goods. Going here, moving there. But actually, rather than bringing happiness, that increases one's desires still further, which brings distress and unhappiness. But rather, here, by the Bhagavatam's teaching, what will bring happiness is satisfaction. One who is satisfied, always self-satisfied, for such a person there is no distress. And how does one feel self-satisfied again? He's living in the mercy of Krishna. He accepts what is as Krishna's grace. Such a person, actually satisfied, feels happiness everywhere. So I'll read just this short purport to 15. Human life is simply meant for developing Krishna consciousness. One not even try to earn a livelihood to maintain body and soul together. This is illustrated here by the example of a great python which lies in one place, never going here and there to earn a livelihood to maintain itself, and yet is maintained by the grace of the Lord. Food is sent by Krishna's grace, and all he does is open his mouth. As advised by Narada Muni, Tasyaiva hetu prayatete kovida. One should simply endeavor to increase his Krishna consciousness. One should not desire to do anything else, even to earn his livelihood. So strong. Prabhupada is so fixed on this point, is to responsibly use our lives, our human lives. There are many, many examples of this attitude. Madhavendra Puri, for instance, would never go to anyone to ask for food. He would wait. He wouldn't beg. Not only didn't he have a livelihood, not only didn't he have money, he wouldn't even beg for his food. He would only eat when someone would say, "Would you like something to eat?" Sukadev Goswami has also said, "Kasmad bhajanti kavayo dana dharma dana dhan." Why should one approach a person who is blind with wealth? Rather, one should depend on Krishna, and he will give everything. All the members of our Krishna consciousness movement, whether they be grihasthas or sannyasis, should try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement with determination, and Krishna will supply all necessities. The process of adhagara vritti, the means of livelihood of a python, is very much appreciated in this regard. Even though one may be very poor, he should simply try to advance in Krishna consciousness and not endeavor to earn his livelihood. Okay, so tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall continue. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.